Hello. As this part of the slide says, my name is Steve, and as this part of the slide says, I'm a bit of a geek. Now, if we press play on the right video, this is a session all about emulation and how anyone can write one. Over the next 45 minutes or so, we'll be talking about the basic principles of emulation, how it works, what it does, why we do it, and the sort of terminology that we'll use throughout the rest of the talk. We'll talk about the basic development process, the type of modules that you have to build, the components, what a hello world would be in terms of an emulator. And we'll look at the shortcuts that we can take, which, while they're not necessarily valid, actually get us there a bit quicker. We'll look at ways of improving the emulator, the second steps. We'll put more flesh on the bones, and we'll highlight the pitfalls that happen when we start to improve the emulator to make it better. And then finally, we'll look at the collateral. What else is necessary to build and maintain an emulator for the long term? So if you're the sort of person that enjoys the open source world, but don't necessarily want to be coding, this is the sort of thing that you can look at to help out the development of open source emulators. But before any of that, who am I? What have I done to earn a place on this video screen? Or perhaps, as this side should be called, the ego slut. Well, I'm a developer. I've always been a developer. I started off being a junior developer. I've done senior development and even to CTO level in industries such as games, and education technology and serverless infrastructure, that sort of thing. I've written some books, I've done AR things, I've done VR things, and I've spoken at FOSDEM a few times on various topics. But that's not particularly important. What's on this slide is not important. What's important is what's not on this slide. And what's not on this slide is the fact that I am not an emulator developer. I've written emulators, but I've never been a professional emulator developer. I don't work at a university studying old machines, preserving this stuff at a university, learning. All of this stuff that I'm going to tell you now is what I've learned by building emulators and by developing them for myself and for the open source community. So hopefully there is something here that will allow you to go away and build your own emulators. So let us look at the principles of emulation. In essence, emulation is about implementing a piece of hardware in software. Now, why would we want to do this? Well, my personal interests are around digital heritage. I like the fact that the old machines can be preserved for a new generation, because these old machines are quite literally falling apart. We can't get the electronic components. Fixing them up and repairing them is quite a specialised job. So being able to represent that old machine and its old software in new software that isn't going to expire just yet is quite a good thing. It's one of the reasons why I also think emulators need to be built in the open, because we need to be able to preserve the knowledge of how those machines worked, not just what they did. We can do that with an emulator, and especially with software being much easier to understand than hardware, it becomes available to a lot more people. Now, I will be using the word emulator throughout the talk. Emulation, however, is to make a new thing which does something which is the same as an old thing and doing it in the same way. Simulation just says, I'm going to make a new thing, do the same as the old thing, but potentially doing it in a different way. So when we build emulators, what we're really building are simulators, because we do not emulate the electrons inside the chip. We just simulate it by pretending. But in the same way that journalists keep calling hackers who break into computer systems hackers, whereas we would correctly refer to them as crackers, we're just having to accept the fact that emulation is what most people understand as an emulator, even though it should probably be called a simulator. And we'll also be considering the high level at the start, where we'll take each component of a piece of hardware and re-implementing that in software. And essentially, there are really only four components that we need to build in order to have an emulator for an old machine. And we'll go through each of those. And if you're wondering which components you need, you always start with a circuit diagram or a block diagram of that old machine. But essentially, they always break down into sort of four main areas. That is a CPU, a memory, a display, and then an event loop, which is something that ties the whole thing together. So we'll start with something which affects all the elements in the emulator, and that's the clock. The clock is king. We'll have an event loop that will process n seconds of time. And time, even in the real world, is quantized. It goes from one step to another step of time with nothing in between. So essentially, our clock must be there keeping a regular pulse of what's going on. And we have one clock for the whole system. Even though in reality, the hardware might have several clocks, each running at slightly different times and even out of sync with each other, we have one virtual clock that controls all of them to keep everything in sync. This is important for us as emulator developers because we like reproducibility in our code. If we have an interrupt that fires at arbitrary times, that might be great for a responsive piece of hardware, but in software, it becomes bug tracing very, very difficult. So we always have our one virtual clock that triggers off everything else. And we'll develop the emulator with one code block per chip. Now you might call this code block a module or a class. Either way, it is one file or one group of files that does one defined task. And the defined task would mirror exactly what is on the circuit board. That might be one chip or one group of components that does a unified thing. You might find that an old computer has three or four different RAM chips in it, but we might consider the RAM as a block. And we're not going to worry about optimizing it yet. We're not going to worry about making this loosely coupled just yet. We're just going to have a module for a task on the circuit board, on the original circuit board. And finally, the number of bits. Now, this is quite important. When you're using a language such as C, you'll define a type to have 8 bits or 16 bits. These will mirror the hardware in the machine itself. And if you try and include a number which requires more than 8 bits or a number that requires more than 16 bits, it just won't store it. The bits will fall off the end. That's exactly how the chip works in a piece of hardware. Other languages, such as JavaScript, need a little more coaxing, because if you try and store a number that requires more than 8 bits, JavaScript will say, oh right, you need a bigger space, that's fine, I'll give you a bigger space. And it changes its type internally. So some languages require you to do a little bit of coaxing to handle this sort of thing. And I wrote an EMF library which has a class that handles all of this for you. And as we'll see later, there are some additional things that will happen, some additional magic, but we'll come to that. So there were two approaches that you'd often take when performing this sort of arithmetic. The first is you can say, when I perform the arithmetic, I will then mask off the 8 bits, or I'll mask off the 16 bits that this variable is allowed to contain. Or whenever you read it, you can say, I read the value, I'm now going to mask it. The reality is you always mask when you write the value back. It's like code. You read code more often than you write it. So you write it as well as you can, and in this case, we write the variable back into memory with all the bits that it needs to have. So with that in mind, let's look at an implementation of a basic emulator and what these four classes are. Well, the first is the event loop. The event loop just keeps everything in the system in sync. It goes around each of the components and calls update. It says, I want you to update yourself for n seconds of time, or for n ticks of this virtual clock. Now, in this example, we're running this at 50 frames a second. 50 frames a second is the fastest I/O thing in our system. Now, this is usually the display. It's not the fastest thing in the whole system, that's usually the CPU. But the display usually runs one of the fastest things in the system. So that's our update cycle. At every 1/50th per second, this code runs and we say, right, well, in 1/50th a second, how much CPU time is being run? And every CPU will run at a different clock rate. So you can use that to compute how many cycles the CPU would be running. Now, passing in the number of cycles is usually preferable to passing in the time. This is because you can say pass in the number one, so you can do a step-by-step debugging of your code. Now, there are better ways of writing the step, which we'll come into in the more advanced section, but for now, this is actually good enough to get the emulators running, and usually running well enough to play games, which is what most people want to use them for. Also, the second module is the CPU. Now, this, like all other components, will have an update function and will pass in the number of steps we want it to run. So essentially, we just have another loop here. So for every step, we perform the operations that a CPU would. And most CPUs, particularly of the sort of the retro era in which I'm building emulators, run on a fetch execute cycle. So they start by fetching an instruction from the memory. They then decode that instruction by saying, I've got the opcode number 12, what does this do?